Welcome back to Fold in the Cheese. It is your boy, K-Troll, on the mic. After a couple weeks of rest, I am recuperated. I'm ready to rock and roll. I've got Mr. Gelfan here, rocking that New Orleans Hornets jersey and the Pool Boys buff. Looking rather dapper. Appreciate that. And he's got a
Wake Forest, man.
Is that Lake Forest?
Where is it? Lake Chicago? Forest in Illinois.
I love Lake Forest in Chicago.
Yeah.
What's going on, man?
Nothing much. It's been a little bit since we've been in the studio, eh? Football season is officially done, but football season's never really done, which I love because, you know, obviously you have the Super Bowl, post-Super Bowl kind of hangover for like a week and a half. But then, you know, March comes in, hits you like a ton of bricks because we got free agency, which you love, draft coming up, you know, what's going to be happening there. So, yeah, I just love that it is kind of just football year-round. So the fantasy implications still matter because we're going to talk a lot about free agency. We're going to maybe dabble a teeny bit in the draft about coming up just because of what the free agent moves have made because of that. So, you know what? It's just great to be back in the seat, in the mic, all that jazz.
That's right. We've got a combo episode today because in addition to a absolutely wild free agency in the NFL, we've also got March Madness, baby! Our number two love, our number two passion. So we are not going to give the full deep dive that we have done in years past on March Madness, but there are old episodes that you can check out if you want to know all the nerdy data stats, and they have served us well. I will tell you, completely ruining my chances this year, I'm a two-time reigning champion in one of my leagues because I have adhered to our stats. So
yes,
just going to say.
That's why we do it, folks. That's why we do it. So yes, be sure, because we literally we went through combed through all the stats from 1985 when, you know, the tournament has taken this format until now. So it's a great deep dive of conference power, seed power, you know, playing game, all that stuff. So we're going to
conference tournament champions, preseason rankings, final rankings, all that.
So we'll dive a little bit into that today. Not as much as we typically do because we're doing free agency bonanza, March Madness preview. So let's go. What do we start with, Kim?
Free agency. Let's knock out the NFL and finish that season for now. And then we'll move into the basketball. It's coming up tomorrow. I mean, the main games of the tournament. The playing games have already started. Virginia just got their ass whooped last night. That was hilarious. You mentioned, what was it, an hour and a half of real time?
They did not score any points. It was only 14 minutes of official game time because halftime wasn't there. But yeah, Virginia did not score for an hour and a half. So that was fun.
Just insane. Okay. So let's hit free agency. This is the wildest free agency I've ever seen. And then I started to see the analysts say the same thing. This was the wildest free agency I've ever seen in the NFL. Big names going new places, teams getting completely reshaped. I'm happy to say Tennessee is one of those teams getting completely reshaped. I don't know what to expect as a product on the field this year, but it's going to be very different than the last 5 to 10 years. Probably different than the last 20 years. This is insane. So I think the biggest signing was Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta. I think it's one of the biggest. That's massive. It's massive because they have not had a quarterback, and they've been drafting all these incredibly talented first-round players. Cousins is a very solid top-half quarterback. Minnesota, it's a big loss for Minnesota. They now don't really have a good quarterback. They signed Sam Darnold.
So they still don't have a quarterback.
I still want to see Jaren Hall complete a game and see if he's any good, but he keeps getting knocked out, so that's probably not a good sign.
Is the pastor not still there, or is he like, was his deal expiring?
I think they were like, we need you for about 6 games, and that was about it.
Hey, come in today. You play tomorrow. You'll win us. You're
going to look great tomorrow, and then you're going to look worse every week going
forward. As you get more reps, you'll look worse.
And then everyone will be reminded yet again of why you're not really a starting quarterback. Love it. Love the guy. Love the story. Not a starting quarterback.
True.
So the Cousins to Atlanta move immediately bumps Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, all these guys, huge upgrades. They also traded for Desmond Ridder. They traded to Arizona for Rondale Moore, who I think is a nice complimentary piece as well.
And they got Darnell Mooney, right?
And they signed Darnell Mooney from Chicago. So like this is a totally different team as well. Their receiving core is now legitimate, and they've got so many weapons. If you include Pitts and Bijan as incredible receivers and mismatches out of the backfield, you've got a very competent quarterback, dangerous team, I think.
And you still got like a Tyler Allgeier too, just to spell Bijan. So now we'll actually get to see some weapons being used. Arthur Smith is gone, so he's not afraid to actually feed his stars, which is nice. One quick fact about Kirk Cousins, which I just find hilarious. So if he plays out his entire contract with Atlanta, which is for $180 million, $100 already guaranteed. he will have made over $420 million in his NFL career so far. You combine that. I know you'll always just give me shit because of Tom Brady. You combine. Look at Tom Brady in his NFL career. He made $323 million. And that was over 23 years in the NFL. So it's just kind of hilarious. Kirk Cousins' agent is probably the best agent of all time in getting all this guaranteed money and just cumulative totals. Spectacular. Don't get me wrong. Kirk has proved it on the field. As you said, top 15 quarterback, just reliable. You know he can put up big numbers. So he's proved it on the field. He proved it in Washington when he had 2 years on the franchise tag, got his big deal in Minnesota. So kudos to that man. We're getting some cash. And I did finish that quarterback documentary. I had a nicer appreciation for old Kirk. He's such a dork, but he's
a dork. He is a plaid shirt man. Yes, I will caveat by saying Mahomes' singular contract is bigger than Brady's entire career as well. A $400 million deal.
Well, that's Patrick Mahomes, who's won three Super Bowls, two MVP worthies. Kirk Cousins.
I'll tell you, I think Kirk Cousins' agent is telling these teams exactly what we would say, which is go ahead and find yourself a quarterback. Who else are you going to pay?
Yeah.
Oh, you do want a top 15 quarterback. I have one right here. It's not Tom Brady. Okay, fine. Don't pay him. Oh, well, you do want him? Okay. That'll be $100 million guaranteed. Good on him. Good on him.
But again, that's what we've talked about, especially if you look at last season. It's crazy how many, at least half the league, had terrible quarterback play from no-name guys. And so, yeah, Kirk Cousins being the darling of the free agent quarterback class is just, it speaks volumes. And I don't know what it is. Like, real quick, two-minute talk of why there aren't 15 good quarterbacks in this league, or I should say, why there aren't 20. You know, we've got maybe 15.
I would give more credit to scheming than is currently given to. I don't think these guys are just trash players. I mean, they've been quarterbacks since middle school and have been trained in every possible way and coached in every possible way. So then you're looking at the players around them and the schemes. I think one thing happens: top guys go to shitty teams. And they never really make it because the team is so bad. And that is, that's unfortunate.
Deep dive on that as well to see who's drafted in the top 10 to see, you know, obviously, as you said, going to shittier teams, unless people trade up and do something crazy, but they are going to the shittier team. So it could just hit them right in the beginning. I mean, the Browns, how often were they drafting quarterbacks since 1999? Continue.
Yes. Top players going to shitty teams. The contract situations have to be just right for you to be able to rebuild a team around a top pick. And we're going to get to that with the Bears here, which is what they're going to do. Perfect situation for an actual number one quarterback to go into and actually have a chance to be successful. That is so rare. Usually the team is an absolute dumpster fire and it's like throw a quarterback in there. There's no line. There's no defense. You're getting absolutely murdered the whole time. You may not have any weapons on offense. The Patriots this year are a good example of like, a quarterback there is going to struggle, man. They've got good running backs now, right? That's good. But who are you going to throw to? You know, like you're just not set up for success. So it's a tough spot to land in. So you get the top highest pedigree people going to the crappiest teams. You often see success from guys who get drafted like 20th or whatever, you know, Aaron Rodgers type, where you're like, that was actually a really good organization. And I don't want to say like you need to sit in order to be successful. There's mixed reviews on that because some guys can come right in. But I mean, I think so much of it does depend on what's around them. And that sets up. So then I think you matriculate a lot of the best talented players. They just lose out because they never hack it in these crappy situations. And so the ones that stick around are these crappier quarterbacks to begin with. So your most talented guys don't get the shot that you need them to have. Like you need to just be like, okay, Minnesota now needs the number one pick because they've got all the weapons on
offense. They've got the pieces around.
Just give them Caleb Williams and let them go there because they lost Kirk Cousins. Like that'll make the league, you know, normal again. But that's not how it works.
Right. Okay.
That's my dissertation on that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we talked about Kirk Cousins. Let's stick with the quarterbacks because there's obviously a lot of crazy quarterback shuffling. The two biggest names obviously on the move were Russell Wilson getting waived by Denver, getting picked up by the Pittsburgh Steelers, getting for the veterans minimum. So getting $1.2 million needed to get out of Denver. Him and Sean Payton just not ever on the same page. It's not his guy, whatever. I don't want to get on Sean Payton, but that's, I feel like, for another episode, we can kind of dissect his situation. But
yeah,
he's fresh start in Pittsburgh, who traded Deontay Johnson. So losing a weapon there. But then go around and they trade for Justin Fields. The biggest name in this offseason is he going to stay in Chicago? Are they going to trade the number one pick? Are they going to trade Fields? ends up trading Fields for a sixth rounder. So they did right by Justin Fields. They didn't want to just throw him. They didn't want to just get the best offer they could and just throw him wherever. They wanted to do right by him in a situation where he could thrive and learn and you know, succeed. So they did right by him. So now you got Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in the same quarterback room, which is
for $1.2 million and a rookie contract. You know, the last deal, the last year on Justin's rookie deal. It's like you're paying nothing for two quarterbacks who could be top half in the league. You know, they certainly have the talent to be. For sure. I thought that was a massive win for Pittsburgh.
That is, you know, you have Russell coming in as the starter, and then eventually you assume next year, if not maybe late this season, coming season, that Justin will then be the starter. So with that being said, the Steelers then ship out Kenny Pickett, who was Kenny Pickett. He goes to the Eagles, going to be their backup. So staying in state. So Kenny Pickett, we all knew he wasn't really the guy. He wasn't great.
Called it. Yeah. And then Sam Howell went somewhere too, like Vegas or somewhere. Where did he end up going? I forget.
Where did he go? I don't even know. Sam Howell went somewhere.
And I'm kind of like, yeah, well, what'd I say? Could have told you at the beginning of last season. It is interesting though, because like we saw a lot of young quarterbacks who were given the opportunity to win, not make it, and get traded. And I don't remember that necessarily being the case all that often. I think what's happened is the league in the last 10 years or so has really shifted towards, because of salary cap, trying to let a rookie deal quarterback lead their team and build around them with a great defense and other weapons, because you've got the cap space. And so I guess these teams tried that not very effectively, in my opinion. I mean, Mac Jones in New England, like there was just no talent there. Like
no talent.
I feel bad for the guy. He was complete trash, but he also got like yanked out of the game and put back in and yanked again. And Bailey Zappi's in there doing the same. Like he looked exactly the same as Bailey Zappi. So I get why they would trade him, but not a good opportunity for him. So now he's now the backup in Jacksonville, which is super weird.
So it's crazy. Look at that 2021 quarterback draft class, which was at first heralded as like, this could be one of the best draft classes in most recent history. You know, Trevor Lawrence, number one, still in Jacksonville, still the starter. Kudos. Number two, Zach Wilson, not going to be starting, probably going to be off the team. He'll be traded.
He's not going to be on the Jets. He just doesn't have another team yet. No one else wants him.
No one wants him. So then you got Trey Lance. He gets nothing in San Francisco, traded to Dallas, who's going to be a backup for there. Then you get Justin Fields, traded to Pittsburgh, where he's going to be the backup for now. And then you had Mac Jones, who now just got traded to Jacksonville to be the backup. So what was once heralded as the saving draft class of the NFL has now just been demolished and terrible.
I wonder if it's going to have impacts though on like how teams approach that position again. Like if they're once again going to say, you know what, we're actually going to have Gardner Minshew start our games and we're going to draft a guy and have him sit and maybe halfway through. Like there's been so much pressure to get him on the field immediately, especially if the first round draft capital. And I just wonder if that's going to start to fade back to the way it used to be. It really did used to be a lot more like we draft him and sit him, you know. And
I mean, you'll still have those quote unquote generational talents in a Caleb Williams or Trevor Lawrence's that are going to come out and yes, they're going to start right away, but maybe not for a Mac Jones, maybe not for those Justin Fields type where they probably do need to sit here and learn. I mean, let's be honest, everyone lives in love with the quarterback position. They're still going to be the most highly sought after draft picks. They're all going to go top 10, top 15. That's still going to happen. But to your point, you're right. Maybe some of those will sit for a year just so they can kind of get that year under their belt and learn behind these other guys. But
yeah,
regardless, it's
kind of wild. I think it's going to reshape the NFL a little bit. Let's talk about some running backs real quick, cause there was a running back carousel. This was crazy. A lot of good big names, free agents. Here we go. Huge
names.
Saquon goes to Philly. Josh Jacobs goes to Green Bay. Aaron Jones goes to Minnesota. Derrick Henry goes to Baltimore. Tony Pollard comes to Tennessee. You got DeAndre Swift going to Chicago after the Eagles signed Saquon. Joe Mixon goes to Houston. Zach Moss goes to Cincy to replace him. Devin Singletary is now replacing Saquon with the Giants. Like, they shifted all these guys around.
Yeah.
Which one or two of these are you most excited about?
I mean, you got to start at the top. You got to look at Saquon in Philadelphia. That's going into – he's finally going into a situation with a good quarterback – weapons on offense, a good line, like that is going to be scary. Miles Sanders proved he could do it. And then you saw what happened when he left Philly and he sucked. So if Miles Sanders can have a 1,300 yard season with 12 touchdowns, what the hell is Saquon Barkley going to do? I mean, DeAndre Swift had a revamp in his lone season in Philly. He went over 1,000 yards. So If you get the caliber of Saquon Barkley, and if he stays healthy, yikes. So I think that was obviously the best running back signing. You got him for a good value, three years for 37 or two for 30, anyway, something like that. So it was a right good market value. Good for him. He's still got above what the franchise tag would have been. I think he has earned it, even though he has been a little banged up, but you got to look at Saquon being the best spot right there.
Yeah. I think Henry in Baltimore is dangerous too. Just touchdowns, raw touchdown numbers. I mean, double digit is in the bag with him being there. If you open up that game with Lamar's rushing ability, they run more
RPO
on the outside. They get him on the outside a lot more, which is what Tennessee, I just kept screaming, like, why are we running him up the middle? Get him outside and give him, you know, let him get up ahead, full head of steam. And he's so tough to bring down. But
in Baltimore, though, I did forget they signed Dalvin Cook. Do you think that will have?
Did they really?
Yeah. Prior. So he got waived by the Jets and then he got picked up on the practice squad as they
That's right. At the end of last year.
Yeah. That's right. Do you think that will play into it? Or is Dalvin, see ya, you're done?
Is he even still on the team? I don't know.
I think he is.
You're going to have other guys. I think he'll be a 60% workhorse for them, but they'll have other guys.
Right. Gus go to Houston too?
Gus went to the Chargers.
That's right. He went to, because Austin Eckler went to the Commanders, like another big name.
It's a big name. I don't know if it means anything, but yes.
He's a name.
Yeah. I think Josh Jacobs will thrive in Green Bay. I think Aaron Jones will thrive in Minnesota, just like he did in Green Bay. Those are both good landing spots for them. I think Pollard in Tennessee was a head scratcher. I'm stoked because I love Tony Pollard. I think he's a stud, but I feel like Tajay Spears is the same style of game. And so I'm worried, like, number one, it hurts Tajay Spears. It could hurt Tony Pollard. They could cut into each other. But number two, like, you already have that guy. Like, we need a thumper. So
I don't know
what they address in the draft.
I mean, just let's jump on the Titans real quick. So obviously, yeah, they dip and get Tony Pollard. Then they make a big splash and get Calvin Ridley. So you're going to have DeAndre Hopkins, Calvin Ridley, Tony Pollard. I mean, they're gearing up to try and make a splash. Will Levis the guy, or is this kind of his make or break year? Kind of what the Dolphins did with Tua, saying, hey, here are all these weapons. Now show something.
Yep. That's exactly how I feel. I feel like everyone's just like, oh, what a terrible place for Calvin Ridley to land or whatever. I'm like, you got to realize, like, that whole regime is gone. The whole play calling, the ground and pound, the exotic smash mouth, that is gone. Vrabel is gone. The GM is gone. Like, everything. It's a new-ish second-year GM. You've got a brand-new head coach, Brian Callahan, from Cincinnati, who was the offensive coordinator. You got his dad, Bill Callahan. Everyone says the best line coach maybe ever. Just like, you've got this whole new system in place. And so they're not going to look the same as they did last year. They're not going to be smash-mouthing people and being like, why would you throw Calvin Ridley there? They don't throw the ball.
But here's
we're gonna throw the ball.
Here's also the thing about Calvin Ridley. People saying, like, oh, is that not a good landing spot for him? I don't think he wants to be the guy.
I think it's a great spot. I think it's just like Roddy White when he was in Atlanta.
Exactly.
He's a veteran, he's on his way out.
I don't think he has the mental capacity to be the one. I don't think he has the maturity to do that. So you put him in a Tennessee where he's not, you know, when he went to Jacksonville, like, oh crap, he's coming back. He's gonna be the one that pushes him over the edge. Let's see. Like, he was fine. He got over 1,000 yards, but it was very hit or miss. I think now focus is not necessarily going to be on him, because I'll talk about it, Tony Pollard, the fact that they still have DeAndre Hopkins, you know, so he can just kind of settle into that. I'm still good. You can get me the ball, but I'm not going to be the focus. So I think that's a good spot for him. And I mean, I don't know. I think it was a good fit.
I think it's the best number two they've had since they had Corey Davis and AJ Brown, you know, where it's like, okay, we've got two solid receivers here. I feel really good about it. I like it. I think they're going to throw a lot more. And now they can address the offensive line in the draft with their 7th overall pick, get a tackle that's going to be their anchor of the offensive line. Probably Joe Alt is who we're looking at. I mean, I think it's a great move for Tennessee. I love it. I'm excited to see the team. I'm excited to see
it. You got season tickets now.
That's right. It's because of me. They knew they needed to step it up. I'm not coming to watch some trash, Kemper. Crappy line, run the ball. Let's throw the ball. Let's air it out.
Here we go.
Let's go.
Does Mike still live there, by the way?
Huh?
Does Mike Vrabel still live there? Or did he move?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I mean, he doesn't have another job, so I'm sure he still lives here.
You should call him up. That should be your goal, is just be like best friends with Mike Vrabel. Can you imagine? First of all, you already have Matt Ryan and Drew Brees in your backyard throwing you the football. True. You throw Mike Vrabel in there. Ooh, that's a backyard barbecue.
Mike Vrabel and I could throw down some beers together. That's for sure.
That too. That too.
That is definitely true. If
you did, I know you know the temper comes out. You ain't messing with Mike Vrabel.
No. No, that man is a psycho.
And just a massive human being, which is why he didn't get a job.
What was that? You see the articles that people were like, one of the GMs at the Combine said he was like almost too intimidating during coaching interviews. They're like, it just seemed like someone who wouldn't be able to take direction from other people. He was so domineering. And I was like, I mean, his personality is that way too, though. He's hard headed and he's kind of an asshole. And like, I don't know. It is funny.
Love him.
I liked him. I liked him just fine, but I'm ready to move on. I'm ready for something new.
Fair.
Let's shift gears here. Let's switch over. Free agency was awesome. We're going to cover that more as we get over the draft as well, which I can't wait for. That's coming up in April. So we will hit that again this summer at some point. But tomorrow, the real tournament starts. 64 teams, March Madness. Let's go. Let's go.
That's cool.
Yes. I want to hit a few key matchups in this tournament. Then I want to give an upset pick for each of us. We're not going to give away too much because some of our stupid friends are listening to this and we're in a pool with them.
Stupid friends.
Looking at you, Drader. And then we're going to give our final four. I'm going to give a final four from a bracket that I'm not entering into our friend pool. I've got a few, obviously. No bracket of integrity around here. And then we're going to recap on the Savory 16.
Yes.
The key takeaways to tournament success. We're going to recap that one for all the lovely listeners out there. So key matchups. What are you looking at in this tournament?
I mean, you got to look at, for me, I think the West is probably the roughest region. I mean, you got your one at North Carolina, who's probably the weakest of the four, but then your two is Arizona, and you're like, oh, crap. I mean, and first of all, you look at Michigan State. You got to love Michigan State because, one, people at before Selection Sunday thought, oh, man, they might not make it. 25 years in a row, they have made it. Is this going to be the year? But it turns out they had no reason to sweat. They were the highest ranked 9, almost an 8. So, you know, they're going to win their first round game. They always do. But if I'm UNC, I'm looking at that and going, oh, crap, it's Michigan State. No, they were preseason number 5. If everyone remembers that, they were preseason number 5. Granted, they did not live up to set expectations. I feel like that happens a lot. But as we've always talked about, Tom Izzo can get his team to the Sweet 16. So if I'm North Carolina, I'm looking at my second round matchup and already being upset.
Yes, I agree.
So I know you're looking at key matchups. I'm just looking at the West in general, just because of the teams you have in there. Again, with your Arizona 2, you got Alabama's your 4. I mean, they can put up points in a heartbeat. Baylor's a 3. That's probably the weakest 3 in my mind. But everyone else in there, it's just stacked. So I'm just
West. But to your point, Baylor is like Michigan State, where it's like, you know, the coaching can get them through the tournament. They're constantly advancing in the tournament. They're an up and down team, but they can make the Final Four and no one would be like shocked. I mean, it'd just be like, that's Baylor. That's what they do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't so personally have that.
It's so funny. Just real quick on Baylor. You go back 4 or 5 years and it was, oh, Baylor, they're going to get upset. Oh, Baylor, they always disappoint. But Drew has flipped it around and obviously won a championship a few years ago. But as I was just, in my mind, of the 3 seeds, I think that's the weakest, but it's still, the West is still a bear.
It is a bear. It's a wild. It's a Baylor bear. I've had the most trouble with that region, I think. Cause I'm just like, I could see any one of these teams coming out of it. And I could see some much lower seeds coming out of it too. Like, you didn't even talk about St. Mary's, who's like a really rock steady, always good in March team. There are some upstart teams in the double digit seeds that you got to watch out for in that region too. Even like Nevada at the 10, you've got New Mexico at 11. We might talk about them later. You've got
Dayton at the 7. They're Dayton always at 7.
Either one of those teams could get a hold of Arizona, and Arizona has certainly missed on the tournament in recent years. I have a lot of trouble taking them to go far, even if all the data and all the stats and all the eye tests and everything tells you they're going to do it. So that is a tough region. I agree.
Yeah. So let's hear it.
I'm looking at the East region here and UConn's path. And I think they got screwed. I think they got the toughest draw and they're the number 1 overall seed. I don't get how they end up with Iowa State, who's red hot, just won the Big 12 title, can beat anybody. They get them at number 2. They've got Illinois, who just won the Big 10 title at 3, who is kind of like an up and down team, you know, throughout the season, but again, peaking at the right time. I think Auburn at 4 is an insanely good team, and that they advanced
the analytics. All these tournament champions in this region.
Yes, and all the advanced analytics say Auburn is like a top 5 to 10 team, and like that's dangerous second round. San Diego State was runner up last year, dangerous. BYU, who everyone says should have been a 5, but I guess they have a no play on Sundays rule, so they had to get a 6 apparently in this region. There's some weird thing where it's like they're basically a 5 seed, but they had to get bumped down to a 6 because of that. I mean, it's a tough region for UConn.
And you got the Darling Owls back at an 8 seed.
Ford Atlantic, yeah, Ford Atlantic in an 8 seed. We saw what happened when they were 9 last year. I mean, yeah, it's a tough draw for them, I think, personally.
It is. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. East, especially when you, as you just mentioned, with UConn being the number one overall seed. And it's just so funny. Like, I mean, I've looked at this bracket in the region, but as we were just saying, Iowa State, Big 12 champions, Illinois, Big 10 champions, Auburn, SEC champs. Like, holy crap.
That's a tough round. That's a tough draw, man.
Pretty brutal. And Stetson, they were also Atlantic Sun champions. Like,
Stetson, I mean, how many champions are you going to have to go through, right?
So many champions. Northwestern, just smart Big 10 champions.
Smart people. Smart, super smart. Super UAB smart. Was the Sun Belt or whatever champion.
The Blazers, it's a dragon. I mean,
you have to slay a dragon to get through this region. It's insane.
The Dukes of Duquesne. Anyway.
Rick Bulldogs. Look out.
Okay. So, yeah, you're looking at the East as being brutal for your returning champ. I'm looking at the West as also just being a gauntlet. We're not talking about the Midwest or the South. They are what they are. Houston, I think, can make a run. But give me one good upset pick right now. Just one.
So, I sort of hinted it. I've got a lot, obviously. I'm kind of crazy with brackets, and I love taking crazy picks. But
Kemper's getting upset.
Kemper is getting upset. World's colliding. I think the one that I feel probably, I guess I'd say, the most confident in as much as you can for an upset. I like New Mexico over Clemson, and I like them to beat Baylor in the second round. So I've got New Mexico going to the Sweet 16 for whatever reason. I've not watched a ton of games. It's not like I'm a basketball junkie, but everything I'm looking at, reading, researching, that's the one I like.
Okay. I was going to say, you just contradicted yourself saying Baylor can always get to the Sweet 16.
They can.
No, I too like that New Mexico pick over Clemson. I don't know how Clemson 1 made it in and is a 6.
How they're a 6 is ridiculous to me.
That was ludicrous. And New Mexico, you got a familiar face in old Richard Pitino there. So,
and Jamal Mashburn Jr.
He hasn't had that much success, but I do like that.
He hasn't. Did you hear Jamal Mashburn's kid, Jamal Mashburn Jr., is on that team?
Yes.
So you've got a Pitino and a Mashburn. Look out.
Watch out. All right. So another one I'm looking at, and this actually, we touched on Michigan State. They were the 5 seed. Who did they lose to? Do you remember the season opener? They lost at home. Do you remember to whom?
I've seen this a billion times in my bracket because I already picked that team to win. I don't remember if it was James Madison.
It was James Madison. So James Madison comes in, gets a 12 seed, and they are playing number 5 seeded Wisconsin, another Big Ten team. But Wisconsin, got a little hot towards the end of the season. Obviously made a good run in their conference tournament. But James Madison, I think, had maybe 2 or 3 losses on the season. That's it. Proved they could play those big-time games going into the Breslin Center, upsetting number 5 Michigan State. So I'm putting the Badgers on upset alert with the Dukes of James Madison.
I love it. And I love the Dukes in that game and maybe one more.
Oh, to play Duke? The Dukes playing Duke?
I got Vermont beating Duke.
You got the Catamounts. You got the Catamounts.
It doesn't matter who they're playing. They're going the first round for me.
I would love to see a Dukes and Catamounts matchup. That would be great. Yeah. Dogs versus cats. What do you expect?
We'll find out.
We only got a couple minutes, Kemper. Let's dive into those savory 16.
Okay. Let's alternate here. I'll go with number one here. These are 16 tips for winning your bracket. So pick one and only one play-in team to win a first-round game as well. So we don't have 11 seeds this year. 11 seeds have historically been the ones that have won. We got 10s and 16s. For me, I like Colorado to beat Florida if Colorado gets past Boise. I actually like either of those teams to beat Florida because I think Florida is injured and real up and down anyway. That's the one I'm taking.
Since 2022, there's only been one year in which a play-in team has not won a first-round game. So pretty wise to do so.
Love it.
All right, number two, the champion does not need to be preseason top 10. Or excuse me, the champion does need to be in the preseason top 10 and final rankings top 10. So there was a lot of shifting this year. So got to do your research there. You know, Michigan State They were top five. Now they ain't. Not even ranked. So a lot of movement. UConn, pretty solid right there. Houston.
Houston, Purdue. There's several teams that fit the bill there, and several that have dropped out of those rankings. So I would say number three, don't pick a tournament champion. So that is not always the case. If you're going to do it, pick the Big East, because the Big East tournament champion has won and did last year as well. But do not pick a tournament champion. It's the momentum there that you think is like they're peaking at the right time. A lot of times they get exhausted and they actually don't make it that far. So
you're saying don't pick NC State, who had to win five games in 5 days?
Don't pick NC State to win it all.
Okay. Pick one or two number ones to make the Final Four. Last year was obviously kind of an anomaly. We had nines, you had fives, you had fours. Gross. But historically speaking, you're going to see one or two of those ones making it in. A couple years ago, we had four number ones. So this year, it seems pretty strong with a UConn being top heavy, a Houston being pretty top heavy. Purdue is a question mark, but look at those ones. One or two of
them. Yeah. Pick a number one to win it all. So this was kind of easy, you know, napkin math here, but I think it was like 15 out of 20 at one point when we did this data. Ones were traditionally just slaughtering it, at least more recently.
True. There have been 25 championships from number one seeds. The next highest is five from a two seed. So just
there you go.
Keep that in mind. Where am I?
13.
Pick a 13 to win a game. We talked about an 11. We talked about a 12, but 13 have also had historically good matchups. And so Kemper already did. He's picking the Catamounts to upset the Dukies. So you know what? Jump on that Catamount train.
Yeah, I don't think that will happen, but I certainly want it to. I think Samford is the one to look at on this one. Kansas is banged up. Pick a 12 to win a game. They will beat a number 13 and an 8-9 if they play them. So they'll beat a 13. So if you have a 12 winning one game and you happen to have a 13 winning. Madison. So if you've got James Madison in Vermont, for instance, pick that 12 to win both. I happen to have McNeese and Samford winning in that little region. I'm going to take McNeese, and that'll be my 12-13. I'm giving away all my picks. I shouldn't be doing that.
You're giving them all away.
All of them.
All right, pick two number 11 seeds to win. You know, typically speaking, this has also been one of your bigger upsets, the 4-11s. Everyone says 5-12, but 4-11 has historically been up there as
6-11.
Well. 6-11. So, geez, what is my deal with math today? 6-11. Thank you, sir. So Kemper mentioned New Mexico over Clemson. That's in a 6-11 right there. And then we mentioned them not to pick them for the entire tournament, but NC State, they are an 11 seed going up against number 6 Texas Tech. So just saying, it is a possibility.
Yeah, last year was the first year in a long time when all sixes held. And so all sixes won the first round. This would have been bad advice last year. I think you got a couple this year. Like the two 11s that we're going to be picking, we're also going to be picking two 10s to win a game against sevens. And so that's always kind of a toss-up game. It's really almost as close as the 8-9 game. So flip a coin, take a couple 10s that you like, couple 10s, couple sevens, and you should be in good shape. Just pick the right ones.
Just pick the right ones. That's it. It's easy. It's an easy game. All right. And the 8-9s, they are a toss-up. Someone's getting fired up back here about this 8-9 matchup. So it's a toss-up. But if you go with the 9, don't necessarily pick them to beat the 1. However, if you do pick the 8, pick at least one of them to beat the 1. Because historically speaking, the 8s can knock out the 1 seeds. Look at North Carolina a couple years ago. They went all the way to the championship game as that 8 seed. Upset number 1 Baylor. Look at that.
Yeah, I think the rationale there is if they beat the number 1 seed, take them to the Final Four.
Yes.
8 or 9. And that's what happened with Florida Atlantic actually got to play Fairleigh Dickinson in the second round. But if they win their second round game, I mean, if they make it to the Sweet 16, keep them going.
Yes. That.
All right. Pick one number 7 to win 2 games. So a number 2 getting upset in the second round. This is what that means. Take one of the 7s to do that. Not going to tell you who that's going to be, but should happen.
Should happen. All right. Three versus six. If you're kind of going chalky and you have your 3 versus 6 and your 4 versus 5s, both of those matchups are kind of toss-ups. Historically speaking, it's not showing too heavily on either side. However, number 1 seeds, whatever reason, typically crush the 5 seed. And usually they're not as good against the 4, but if you get that 5 going, that's probably where they're going to stop once they face that number 1. So toss-up.
If you go chalky, stay chalky.
Stay chalky.
Yeah. So here's what's kind of interesting. So 2s are actually 35 and 41 against 1s in the Elite Eight. At least this was from 2 years ago. So when you get to that point and you've got a 2 and a 1 and if you're super chalk, that's a toss up. I would not favor the 1 over the 2. That's really pretty even.
Okay. The ACC typically crushes. I know Virginia just got crushed last night, but they do have a 66% win percentage in tournament history, which is the best of all the major conferences. Obviously, your little conferences, if they have like 2-0, it doesn't count. So ACC, typically, historically, pretty good.
Look for them to outperform their seeds, unless you're Clemson, who sucks. the runner-up, so a couple years ago we said the runner-up could be Purdue. I actually feel like that could be the case this year too, because the Big Ten had a weird streak of, like 7 out of 20 runners-up. And yep. So like they have a tendency to get pretty far and not over the hump as far as champions go. So maybe look at a Big Ten team this year to be the runner-up. If you got them going pretty far, get them to the championship and then knock them off.
Although Purdue lost in the first. Maybe they'll just pull a Virginia where they lose to a 16 and then win the whole thing. Maybe that's their script this year.
Exactly.
And then finally, 3 of your 4 Final Four teams need to have been ranked in the preseason top 25. I know rankings change a lot during the season, but that initial preseason top 25 is usually a good indicator of where the team should kind of usually end up. So typically, we want 3 of the 4 Final Fours to be in the preseason top 25.
And I think it was something like 7 or 8 out of the last 10 Final Fours have had at least one team that was not ranked in the top 25 preseason. So somebody's going to sneak in there. It's going to surprise you.
Yes, true. They will. So there's your 16, man. It is savory. And again, Kemper is backing it up with winning his brackets a few years because of these guidelines.
Entirely.
Last year was kind of wild, but I don't know. In our last minute here, are you expecting the same kind of craziness, or do you think it's kind of go more back true to form?
I personally think we're still top heavy this year. I kind of feel like the top 2 seeds in each region are pretty heavy. I can see a 4 or 5 sneaking in there. The only 9 that I can even imagine would be Michigan State, to your point. If they win one game, Izzo always tells them, you win the first one, I'll win the next one.
The second one.
Tight turnaround coaching. So like that's a dangerous team. But like the rest of them, I feel pretty safe with their paths. I think it'll be more chalky, but we'll see.
We'll see. All I care about is that it's back tomorrow, one of the best days of the year, starting at 12:15 until Sunday at 12:15 a.m. Just constant basketball, which is great. So fill out your brackets, get ready for some madness, and until next time, keep on folding.
Hold it.